The KM Football Podcast. Exclusive interviews with the biggest names in Kent football.
Welcome to the KM Football Podcast. I'm your host, Matthew Panting, and Steve Turver is with me to interview a man you've almost certainly seen in action on the wing, whatever level your club plays at. He was plucked out of the Kent League by Dartford and three promotions later was playing in the best part-time team in English football. His wanderer left foot has bamboozled opposition players up and down the country, and he's provided the Dartford supporters with an extensive catalogue of magic moments. In black and white terms, he's one of only four players in the club's history to score more than 100 goals. He's now third on their all-time list of appearances, having gone past the 600 mark last season. So it's fair to say we've got a lot to talk about with today's guest, who is Ryan Hayes. Ryan, thanks for coming in to see us.
Morning, no worries.
Good to see you. Let's start off with Dartford, the pre-season, obviously in full swing at the moment. How's it going for yourself personally?
Yeah, it's going good. Obviously we come back and we got told to be in shape when we come back, and I've done that, and things are going well. All the boys look sharp, and it's going good.
You still enjoying pre-season now?
No, no one ever enjoys pre-season, but it's been good, to be fair. We've done a lot of short, sharp stuff, which is it benefits me rather than the long run in that some other players like. So it's been all right.
Looking forward to the new campaign, National League South. What's the aspirations for maybe yourself personally, but also the team as a whole?
Me personally, just try and play more. I'll obviously contribute a bit more with the goals and assists more than I did last year, and hopefully for the team we can get in the playoffs and hopefully get that promotion.
What have you made of some of the new signings? Obviously it's the second season for Adam Flanagan and Jamie Coyle in charge.
Yeah, obviously everyone noted last season signings probably wasn't Dartford players, it weren't that they're bad players, it just wasn't moulded for the club, I personally think, and this year they've done their homework and brought in some really good players, and everyone they've brought in so far looks really good in pre-season.
Obviously, it goes without saying, important to get off to a good start once the games kick off in a few weeks.
Yeah, that's what everyone's hoping for. We've got tough August. I think there's 8 games, and hopefully if we can go August unbeaten, then you set yourself up for the rest of the season.
You're one of the senior players at the club now. Is that a role you enjoy?
Yeah, I like it, to be fair. Obviously, I've been a senior player for a couple of years now, but this year even more so. I think there's only me, Bonds and Nobes that are over that 30 mark, and it seems to be going well. We've got some young lads, and hopefully they buy into what we do, and we all get on well.
What was it like for you last season coming back into a club as a new signing to a place that you'd spent such a long time?
Yeah, I didn't enjoy it, to be honest. I love coming back, but obviously I come into the change room and I didn't know many people, and it was hard when I first went back. I won't lie, I didn't enjoy the first few weeks, but once I got my head around it and I was back playing, It seemed to all fall into place.
I think just having been away and then getting used to that new group, and obviously where you weren't part of the squad at the start of the season, it was so different for you.
Yeah, that's what it is. Obviously, pre-season, you do gel a lot, and I wasn't there for pre-season. And I noticed that when I come back, a lot of the boys were closer after I've been away, and I wasn't really sure how I was going to go when I got back. But like I said, after a couple of weeks, it was fine.
Do you think how you're feeling mentally has a big impact on the way that you play?
Yeah, massively. I've always been a confidence player, and obviously when I come back to Dartford, my confidence was shot to bits, and it did take me a good month, 6 weeks to get back, and even in training, some of the boys would give me stick because I was just awful in training. I'd go back and I just couldn't pass water, and I got some stick for that, and like I say, after the first few weeks, I managed to get my head around it, and it was just different going back, obviously with Tone not there. That was probably the biggest mental hurdle I had to overcome.
Remind us what happened last summer, because this time 12 months ago you were a Concord player.
Yeah, it was like I said, it was horrible. It was, I decided to leave. Tone left as soon as I found out Tone was leaving. I was already speaking to Concord anyway. They've already threw me a couple of messages, and it just felt right to leave. Obviously Tone went about, and I didn't know what was happening with a new manager, so selfishly, which was wrong from my point of view, I just sorted myself out before the new managers come in and went to Concord.
Do you think you were just a bit hasty in that decision?
Yeah, massively. Obviously I got the offer from Concord, which from my point of view, which was a crazy offer. I couldn't believe what they offered me, really, and I spoke to the family, and it's just something I had to do personally. It was wrong. Now I look back at it and I regret it, but it's something I had to do at the time.
understandable in a way, because they offered you a two-year deal. As a 30-year-old, you wouldn't get that many places.
No way. I was 33. They offered me a two-year deal, and obviously you get paid through the summer, which I've never had before. And at 33, I thought I'm never going to get an offer like this again. And like I say, for selfish reasons, I had to do it, and it come back and bit me on the bum.
Tell us about that phone call with Tony Bearman when you told him that you'd gone.
Yeah, it was the worst phone call in my life, to be honest. I remember coming out of the Concord gates, and Flam rung me first, and he said, like, I've got the job at Dartford, me and Corley are going in there. I said, like, Flam, I've already signed. It's already done. Like, you should have rung me an hour ago. And then I had to ring Tone, and literally within a minute, we just both broke down. I was in tears to him down the phone, and I just couldn't do it. And in the end, he put the phone down, and we didn't talk for a couple of weeks. It weren't very nice. Like I say, like, my missus and kids are in the car. They've never seen me cry. Like, in 18 years, I've been my missus, and my kids have never seen me cry. And I was in bits in the car. So it wasn't a nice day, to be honest.
Why do you think it was that you found yourself so emotional talking to Tony about it?
Obviously, because we've been together since day one. We've been through quite a lot together, and he's quite a family man as well, and he understood why I'd done it, and even he couldn't believe it. And even when I went back to Dartford, he was like, look, show me your contract, because I don't believe that's what you get, like, what the deal was. And but I could ring up Tom now and talk to him about anything, and we was that close, and I just think the emotions got the better of both of us.
So taking it on a few weeks or a couple of months, fair to say it didn't work out for you over there?
It wasn't that. I went there pre-season, and every player was new, so it was okay, and we all went there, and we bonded well, and the boys we had in were brilliant, and it looked like we had a right good team. And I think we was top after the first six games. I think we won four and drew two, and it was the same team, so it didn't change it. And all of a sudden he changed it on the seventh game, and he left me out, and it went to the eighth game, and I got a text message from the assistant manager during the week. He said, look, I know you're upset about being left out. He said, but look, you're going to be back in the weekend, so get your head right. Went to the game the weekend, manager didn't talk to me, just left me out the starting 11 again. After the game, obviously we lost, it was away at St Albans. So after the game, he's like, look, we've had a great start, we'll all go, we won't have training Tuesday, we'll all go for an Indian. So everyone's just thought nothing of it, went for an Indian. After it, he just pulled me and went, look, we need a chat. I was like, all right. He's like, you're going to have to go. I was like, it's seven games in, like, into a two-year deal, like, I think we was like second at that point then. He's like, look, you just got to go. And I was like, all right, I'll go. And he was like, are you going to go? I was like, all right, I'll go. Like I said, but I want, obviously, compensating. You've made me leave Dartford, like, not made me leave Dartford, but persuaded me to leave Dartford and give me this deal. And then that was it. And then we didn't speak. I wasn't, I was allowed to train. I had to get there early on a Saturday morning, train on my own, 10 o'clock in the morning. I had to run around on my own. Went to see the boys in the dressing room. One lad to see the boys in the dressing room. He said, like, I had to stay out. And then I'd be sitting in the club, like, just in my normal tracksuit. And the chairman would be like, what are you doing? Like, we've got a game. I said, like, I'm not allowed in the squad. Like, and that's how it went on for 3 or 4 weeks. And in the end, he rang me one. I remember it. It was one Friday at work. He rang me. He was like, look, you've got to go. He said, look, this is compensation. Do you want this? And I was like, no. But I wasn't being horrible or nothing. I just wanted something out of it for obviously myself and family. And then he rang me back. He was like, look, like, you can't travel tomorrow. The chairman don't want you on the coach. Like, you've got to make your own way to Oxford. And I was like, well, I'm not going to, like, do that. He was like, oh, also next week, you're going to have to start cleaning the toilets. I was like, don't worry about it. Look, sort something out, we'll do it. And then on that Friday, yeah, that was it. I obviously got off the phone straight away, rung Flanners, or speak to all the time. I just went, look, can we get it signed? And I'll come back for Dartford for the weekend. So I rung Concord and was like, look, I'll sign this release form if you get my contract over and sort it all out. It was like, fine, it'll be done today. Went home, I thought everything was sorted. Flam rang me late Friday night, and he's just like, look, your contract ain't been released. Concord won't release your contract, which was obviously whatever they want to do. I left it up to them. Ended up going to work on the Saturday, and then had the accident, and I couldn't play for like 3 weeks. So it all ended bad, which was, there was no need for it to end bad. I was happy at going. All I wanted was a bit of compensation, which any player in my position would have done.
I think we've glossed over the accident a little bit too quickly. Just remind us what happened.
Well, obviously, I couldn't play on the Saturday, and I just went, look, to the missus, I'm going to go work. Dartford were a rat chipping them. I thought, well, I ain't going to watch at Chippenham. So I went to work, hour into work, walked back and forgot the owl was there, fell down the owl. Broke my arm. The metal rod went through my thigh, which you can't see, I've got a big scar there. Done my shin, so I was in hospital for the day, and Flair rang me after the game. He was like, what's happened? I was like, I'm in hospital, Flair. Like, I'll be out for a couple of weeks. He's like, oh, no. And that was it. I was out for a couple of weeks. Still went training a couple of weeks later, and it's all worked out from there.
That period of being out of the team and kind of out of the squad mentally, it must have been quite a difficult time for you.
Yeah, it was horrible. Like, all I know really is I had to play football. It's all I've ever wanted to do, and I love football. Like, I'd go and watch any football. If there was a game of football down the park, I'd go and watch it, or any game on telly, and I'd watch it. And it was just frustrating because all the boys just at Concord just didn't know what was happening. I didn't know what was happening, and it was obviously a clash of personality somewhere along the line. And yeah, it was horrible because obviously I wasn't playing. I was getting so unfit because I was just eating and drinking, and obviously not training. I weren't allowed to train in the end, so it was awful. Really, mentally, I'd go in with the ump, and it was silly things like that obviously put a bit of strain on the relationship at home, which wasn't good.
And I know Dartford's always been a club that's been very special to you, but does it maybe mean even a little bit more now that you've been away and come back into it? In any sense, did you take the club for granted? What it meant to you?
I wouldn't say take it for granted, but yeah, obviously, I don't know what it was really. Obviously, I had to try something new, and I probably did take Dartford for granted in a way, but when I come back, it just made me appreciate the people that were there. Obviously, the boys and the board and the chairman. And I'm very grateful that they did take me back, because they didn't have to sign me back. I was just lucky at the time that they wasn't doing great, and it made it easier for the path to get back.
When you go back to the beginning of the beginning, and we're not before you got to Dartford for the first time, so you was playing in the Kent League, weren't you?
Yeah.
Thamesmead at first of all, Slade Green?
Thamesmead Reserves, and then obviously I played a couple of times for the first team, only just come on a sub. I was only young, I was only 18, and then I was playing for the reserves, and I was playing up front at the time. And at the end of the season, like, the Thamesmead first manager just said, "Look, you're not gonna play here. You might as well like go and find somewhere else to play." So I was like, "All right, I'll go." And then, lucky enough, all the Thamesmead reserve boys went to Slade Green, so I went there and I loved it. It was my first taste of proper men's football, and it was different. It was a different kind of club down there, but all the boys got on well and all worked for each other. And I'm grateful that Terry Mannings he took me there and took a gamble on me.
So you started off as a striker. What kind of a forward were you?
Yeah.
You weren't one who put the goals away, were you?
I weren't a hard-working one. I wouldn't chase the channel. But, I managed to nick goals, and lucky enough we had some good players. Obviously, they were coming to the end of their career, and I was surrounded by good players. I had obviously Dave Martin was on the left, and we had, like, they was proper men and who just loved playing football, and I was lucky enough that they were good players and set me up for quite a lot of goals in that season.
When Tony Berman was on the podcast, he obviously spoke about the time when he picked you from Slade Green and took you to Dartford. What's your recollection of that moment?
It was. I remember the night like it was yesterday. We had Hive at home, and it was raining, and I was trying things that I should never try in the rain, and our boys were on at me, and the manager was screaming at me, and I was winding their boys up, and they was like kicking lumps out of me, and the next day I just got a phone call. Said, like, Dartford have made an approach for you, you can go. I was like, all right. Went round Tone's house and signed, and that was it.
Were you surprised that you got the approach?
Yeah, massively. Yeah, I did. I didn't think at all. I thought he was ringing me to get rid of me, to be fair. And he rang me to say, look, Dartford want to have a look at you. You can go and train and see what they're all about.
When Tony was on, obviously one of the things he said was everyone was having a go at you during the game and on your back. Was that something you was aware of at the time when you was playing for Slade Green?
Yeah, obviously, yeah, I was only a young lad and they was men, and obviously I'd be trying stuff that I probably should never have tried, and obviously it wound them up and frustrated them. But yeah, obviously I took it as a compliment that they were shouting at me a lot of the time because they just wanted me to do better. But yeah, it was a different world. If you know what I mean, like the Kent League, they just want to work hard and try and get the result.
Tell us what Dartford as a club was like when you joined, because they were still ground sharing, weren't they?
Yeah, to be fair, it was always a well supported club. We were still getting 1,000 down at Stonebridge Road, and it was, but you could see the club was, I wasn't saying turmoil, but it was in a bad way, like finances, and obviously didn't have your own ground, and we trained up at Perry Street in Crayford, which was just a park really, and it wasn't a great club, but it was a lot bigger than what I was used to, and they tried to do things right, and obviously I'm lucky since then, they've just gone from stride to stride, lucky enough I've been a part of that.
Your first two full seasons there, you scored 31 goals across the two seasons, so that striker's instinct or love for a goal was obviously very much there.
It was I didn't go there as a forward, lucky enough. I went, obviously Tone Seamy is a forward, but when I first went there I was on the left, and then he signed Dave Martin the following season, and he just said to me and him, stay high and wide and we'll go for it, we'll just have a go at teams, and lucky enough it worked out, and me and Dave used to, if I didn't score he'd score and vice versa.
We're so used to seeing you as a left footer playing on the right hand side. Did that take a bit of getting used to, or is it just a position that suits you?
No, it didn't take getting used to. Obviously, I watch a lot of football, and lucky enough, a lot of wingers in that time were left footed. So obviously, I took a lot out of that. And obviously, when I was a kid, I played on the right a little bit. And I just, obviously, if Tony says play there, you play there, and just try and do the best you can.
How much have you had to work on the right foot over the years?
Yeah, I've had to work on it a lot. When I first started playing there, and left backs obviously cottoned on that I was left footed, and they showed me down the line, the crosses were terrible. They used to go out all the time, but hopefully like now I'm more than comfortable to go on the right.
For the latest reaction and reports from the games that matter, visit our website at kentonline.co.uk.
Speaking of Stonebridge Road, I asked you before coming on the podcast to pick your top five moments or top five games for Dartford over the years, and your number five is at Stonebridge Road playing for Dartford, 2016. I think Fleet might have been top of Conference South at the time, a 1-1 draw on Bank Holiday Monday. Why did you pick that game?
For personal reasons, really. Obviously, we got there and we turned up and Tone wasn't there. And it was like, it's the biggest game of the season. It's local derby, wasn't here. We was doing all right, so we thought we ain't been sacked, and I think that's what's happened. And we was in the dressing room and Paul Sawyer Skip pulled me out and he was like, look, Tone's not too well. Like he's had a bit of trouble with the heart, he's in hospital, and he was like, you all right? And I was like, yeah, just tell me he's all right and we'll get on with the game and sort it after. And lucky enough, we went 1-0 down and I got the equaliser, and it was always good playing in them games anyway. Local derbies, you always get a bit of jip off their fans. But to score the equaliser at that game, you could tell what it meant to the players and the fans straight after the goal. So that's why I've just picked that, really.
Was it on your mind then, during the game?
It wasn't. It was at the start, obviously, because it was mad. He's there every game, and obviously William didn't turn up. And obviously, because of his health, it was a bit worrying. But after the game, I spoke to his boy, and it was all right, lucky enough.
Did you know at the time how severe it was? Because he'd had a heart attack.
No, I didn't. That's what I mean. At the start, I just thought we got took to hospital because he had, like Skip just went, like he's had a little bit of trouble with the heart, and I didn't realise the extent of it till after I spoke to his boy. And he's like, look, he's had a bad heart attack, and he's going to be off for a while, which wasn't nice for me personally, and obviously for the rest of the boys.
Tell me a bit about your relationship with Tone, because it's been a lot more than just your manager over the years.
Yeah, like I say, like we've been close, and lucky enough he's a family man, and we get on well off the pitch, and he's done loads for me, to be fair, off the pitch and personally, and he's improved me as a player. And obviously he expects the best out of me every week, and obviously when I wasn't at the best, he'd let me know, and more than others probably. He'd probably let others get away with it, which me, and he wouldn't let me drop my standards, and when I did, he certainly let me know about it.
And as the manager, you've seen him grow as well, the same way you've had to grow as a player.
Yeah, we was talking about this Saturday, and I think I was speaking to Nobes about it. Like over the years as a manager, when I first went there, he was just, like an old school man motivator. And over the years, he just improved tactically, and he probably didn't get the credit he deserved. To be honest, everyone just thought he was a man motivator and got a good group in, but tactically over the years he did improve quite a lot. I think he left me out some games which I didn't agree with, but tactically he got that on that day, he got it right, and fair play to him with what we've done.
He always had that sort of funny relationship in the sense that he would leave you out from time to time, or you would put a crossover and it would go into the car park and the subboard would come up.
That's what
or
I mean.
Something,
even if I was playing well when he fought, look, we've got to leave you out today tactically. Like he'd pull me aside and just went, look, I'm leaving you out. Again, I wasn't happy with it, and he knew that. But it's something that he had to do. And like you say, like I'd cross a ball out and he'd scream at me, and everyone in the ground would just laugh in the end because he'd just scream at me for that reason, which another player would cross it out and he'd go, come on, get back in shape. But yeah, like, I know he's like that, and I know don't mean anything bad by it, but it's just the way he is with me, which I love, really.
Did it take a while for you to get used to that sort of the way of managing you in that sense?
Yeah, I suppose it did a little bit at the start. At the start, he wasn't that irate, to be fair. He just wanted the best out of us, and just he just let me and the other winger just go and play with a freedom, which was better for me. And obviously, the more competitive he got, the more he changed as a person and got a bit stricter, which I think benefited me, really. Like, he'd let me get away with murder, and in the end he didn't, which only improved me as a player, I think.
It's good from a Dartford perspective as well that he's still around the club as well now.
Yeah, I still speak to him every Saturday. I still see him walking past the dressing room, and he'd call me out and we'll have a little chat, what's going on, and he's still good. He's still got, I think he misses it like crazy, but obviously it was his decision to step down, and he's, like I say, he's still about, and we still talk all the time, even on the phone. We'd speak now and again on the phone, and yes, it's still like normal, really. He's just not my manager.
I know that you've listened to Tony on the podcast from a little while back, so you will already have heard this. When we asked him about you, he said, you know, Ryan's either brilliant or a waste of space. A few weeks later, we had Elliot Bradbrook on, and he described you as a special footballer, frustrating as hell.
Yeah.
And they're two of the people that love you the most. Why do you think it is that we see those extremes in your game?
I'm not really sure, to be fair. It's something I've never been able to put my finger on. One day I'd be fine and setting up goals, and the next, like you say, I'd be kicking it into the car park. It's just frustrating personally, because it's probably things like that have stopped me progressing, which is the disappointing thing, but it's just something I've had to get used to.
It's obviously not something you do deliberately and play good one week and not.
Yeah, that's what I mean. And when they shout at me, they actually think I'm doing it deliberately, but I'm not. It's just I realise I'm a frustrating player, and that even Nobe Saturday is like, you frustrate the hell out of me. Like, Nobe was shouting at me Saturday first half, and I just switched off and weren't listening, which is probably even more frustrating for them than it is for me.
Talk about that, you know, not getting a move or the opportunity to go higher. Has that been a disappointment for you?
Yeah, massively. Personally, like, that's all I've ever wanted to be, was a footballer, and it's not that I didn't try. It's obviously that hand on heart probably wasn't good enough on the day that people were about. But obviously, I've seen quite a lot of people move on from Dartford, which in a way it was frustrating, and in a way, like, I was really happy for them.
When you saw players and friends move on, Charlie Sheringham, Tom Champion, Tom Bonner, just some of the names that spring to mind.
Yeah.
How was that?
I was over the moon for them, to be fair, because all the boys that have got moves all deserved it, because at the time they was playing really well. But on the other hand, it was frustrating, because I'd be like, I'm in that same team and I'm still playing well. All right, they might work that little bit harder than me, but I'm still creating, I'm still scoring. And that was, which was even more frustrating, really. I couldn't put my finger on why they was getting moves and why I wasn't, but it's happened now, it's done, and fair play to him. Like, Champs is still playing full-time football now, so fair play to him.
Did you get any whispers that clubs were looking at you?
No, if there was, I wasn't told about it. Tone always says to me, look, no one's ever coming for you. He's so honest with me. He's like, look, no one's ever coming for you. And it's just something I've had to deal with, to be fair. All I'd done was try to play well and entertain. I remember Tone always used to say, look, just go and entertain. Like, when we went back to the new ground, he was like, the ground's built for you, just go and entertain and see what happens. And hopefully I've done that more times than frustrate people.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, we spoke about Stonebridge Road where you first joined Dartford, but also the move to Prince's Park followed quite quickly afterwards. Must hold many special memories for you, that place now.
Yeah, like, it was crazy, really. Like, when I went to Dartford, they were saying about, we're going to get our own ground, so don't worry. And obviously, when we see it getting built and actually playing there, it was fantastic. Like, obviously, sell out crowd, and I didn't know I was actually going to play, because my little boy was due at the time, and lucky enough, he come a week earlier. So lucky enough, he was there on the first game as well, which was quite happy.
Did you not set up the first goal at the new stadium?
Yeah, I put one on Cassie's head early doors. I think it was like the 9th minute, I think. So yeah, that was even more pleasing. I wanted to score the first goal. I was like, if there's a penalty, I'm 100% on it. But it was written for Cass to get that first goal, because at the time he was unbelievable player for us.
the atmosphere that day as well against Horsham, wasn't it? It was amazing.
Yeah, it was crazy. Like, we met in the morning down at Dartford, and Tony said, look, we're going to get a coach through town, because everyone in Dartford was just so happy to be back there. And we went there, and even coming through the gates, there was like 1,000 people as we was going up to the ground. It was crazy. And when we got there, Tony just went, look, forget everything that's going on out there, just go and play the game and win the game. And lucky enough, we done that, and it was brilliant. It was a brilliant day and night. Everyone stayed up there after the game and all had some food together, and everyone was just so happy to be back in Dartford.
And as a winger, playing at Prince's Park, the crowd are obviously very close to you there as well. Does that make a difference to you?
When we're winning, it makes a huge difference, because the confidence when you're running down the wing, like, some of them have been brilliant to me over the years, and in that second half over at the Wooden Man, there's a little group that always get behind me. And but obviously on the turn side, when you're losing, it can be a bit frustrating what you hear, but it's part and parcel of it, I suppose. You have to take the rough with the smooth.
Coming back to Dartford, the club was really on the up at that time. You won Ryman North and then the Ryman Premier a couple of years later. That was your number 4 pick.
Yeah.
The day that you went away to Kingstonian and won 6-2 to clinch the title. So what do you remember about that day?
Yeah, it was like, we knew we was top and they were second at the time, and we went there and we was like, if we win, we've won it. I think it was still early on. I think we still had 6-7 games to go. We was in the change room before, and to be fair to them, we thought it'd be a tough game. They were second, they were still chasing us. And just before we went out to him, said, look, all we've got to do is win this game and it's over, it's done. The season's done, just go and win it and we can relax. And lucky enough, we had a great start. Brothers put us 1-0 up, and then shortly after, I scored the second that come out and managed to catch it well and volleyed it into the top corner. And that day was just, it was fantastic. It was just meant to be that day, I think. And all the boys after, and I still remember the day in the dressing room after. It was a brilliant day, and we fully deserved that year.
To go and win in that manner, as you say, against the team second in the table, did that underline how much better you were than everyone else that season?
Yeah, we knew early on, obviously, like I said, we signed Daisy that year, and we knew if we were signing players like Jamie Day, we was going to be challenging, because I've never played with him, and a couple of boys have played with him, going, look, he is like a cut above, like he's a step above, he's this good. And I played against his brother a few times when I was kids, and I see him come and I was like, if he's this good, we had a good dressing room anyway, and Daisy signed late. And after the first few games, obviously, because we wasn't favourites, there was like Margate that's still throwing the money back. Carl Shorten were really good, and we was going to their grounds winning 3-0 or 4-0, and it was down to Daisy in midfield, and he just used to take the game to teams, and I didn't realise how good he was till I played with him.
And it's still 6 games to go after that, so I suppose you couldn't fully celebrate until you went to play Bognor on the final weekend's memories of that particular trip?
Yeah, it was probably the best weekend in a Dartford shirt, to be fair. We still celebrated, like, to be fair, after that Kingstonian game, Tone said, like, we're not taking the foot off the gas, we're going for the target, 100 goals or 100 points. I didn't know what he targeted, and we got down to Bognor and we was training in the week, and he said, look, we're going to go Bognor on the Friday night, celebrate, we've just won the league, we deserve to win it. And we went down on the Friday night to Brighton. All met down Brighton. It was a boiling hot day during the day. Everyone had days off work. All went down there. Obviously, everyone's drinking all day, all night. We had a game the next day. And to see us all just down there on the beach, even Tony and that, all rather, we've had a good drink all day. And we was like, we've got a game tomorrow. And everyone's like, don't worry about it. So anyway, a couple of us have gone home. And you still hear the old hotel doors going at 4 o'clock in the morning. We're like, we're going to be at state tomorrow. So we've gone out. Walked along the beach Saturday morning, everyone's like, nah, we can't play. I remember us all sitting in the caf, just like the world had ended. On the way to the game, obviously there weren't a coach, so the boys drove. We've all drove to the game, and on the way there we stopped, got ice creams. So we've walked into Bognor with our football bags on and ice creams. Most of the squad have got sunglasses on. So we've got there, boarding up day. Tone's got to come, we'll go out on the pitch. I'll tell you the team out on the pitch. He's named the team. And as he's named the team, a few of the boys have took the sunglasses off. He's like, look, scrap that. This is a team. I can't go with you because you can't play. So instead of them just putting their sunglasses on, going like, sorry boys, they've put their sunglasses on, gone straight to the bar and started drinking again. So we're like, what are we doing here? But lucky enough, we've gone in the dressing room, we've come away winning 2-0, and it was crazy weekend. And then obviously the Saturday we've gone back into Brighton and done it all again. But it was a brilliant weekend, and like I said to you, the funniest story I've ever had in football come that weekend. And it was obviously we've got down on the Friday, and rookie Cole Rook went to work on the Friday. He's like, I have to meet you down there after. So he's got down about 6 o'clock, parked his car in Brighton, and obviously, look, he went, I don't even remember where I parked my car, I've just run down here because I want to like just join the boys. So we've all had a drink and that. Woke up the next morning and he's gone, boys, I can't remember where I've parked my car. So we're like, Rookie, we've got to be in Bognor in an hour and a half, we've got to go. So he's like, look, I ain't coming to the game. So he's gone, Tone, I've had to look for my car. So Tone's head's gone a bit. And we've got to the game and Rookie still's not there. So we're like, he's lost his car. So in the end, we've got in the bar after, we went, yeah, I got here for the last 5 minutes. We was like, where are you? He was like, I had to go to the police station. The police had to drive him around Bognor and look for his car, like, or Brighton and look for his car. It was only them things that Rookie could have done. Like, he's probably he was brilliant signing for us because he'd done what he had to do. He didn't get us over the line, but he was a good player for us. But he's probably the thickest player I've ever come across.
Got to ask, Ryan, was you in the team against Bognor at the start and get left out, or was you out of the team and got left in, or not in the team ever?
I was left out the team and left out the team. And I was actually probably one of the most sober ones, obviously, because I don't drink a lot. And I got there. At the end of the season, he was changing it between me and Noah. Obviously, we won the game and he was changing, won the league and he was changing the games. And it just fell on my time to have the day off. And 5 minutes in, Noah went up for an header and Geezer slit his ear, so I had to come on 5 minutes into it anyway, so it was all right. Yeah, it was a good weekend.
Tell me about playing with Nobes over the years and getting to know him as a person as well.
Yeah, brilliant. He's up there with Daisy, to be fair. I think he's probably the best I've played with, and Harry's improved over the years as a player and as a person, because he did come to Dartford and he was that loose cannon you have in your changing room. He was that little rat, do you know what I mean? Like, he was young and he'd come to Dartford and he'd been at Brentwood, and Dartford was a totally different world to Brentwood, and obviously where he was young, he was out doing his thing, and it wasn't until a couple of years later he took football seriously, and obviously he turned into the best player I've played with, probably by a long way, apart from Daisy and Elliot. But as a player, you can't ask for nothing more. He'll run until he's on empty and still give you more. And as a footballer, I don't think he gets enough credit for being the footballer he is, because he's actually really, really good technically on the ball. And it's like another one, Harry's still at Dartford, I don't know, because even that year that we that year in the conference that he played just in the hole, he used to beat teams on his own, which was crazy, a full-time team didn't come in from.
And that character who came to Dartford, first of all, I think he's still got a little bit about that, hasn't he? You watch him closely in a game, he's so good at the dark arts, yeah, and just winding people up.
Yeah, he has, he's got that bite to him. Like, if he has to go and leave something on someone, he will do it, and he won't care how big they are. Like, and he is like, when I say I played against him when he was at Brentwood, he scored a cracking goal for Brentwood against us at Dartford, and we all said after, like, to Tone, look, if we're going up, sign him next season. And lucky enough we did, and since then he's just gone on to get better and better.
You had many players, sort of fullbacks, try to kick you, so to speak, during the years. You know, want to leave one on you as well. How do you cope with that when that happens?
Yeah, the higher we've gone up, the less kicks I got, really. Like, in the North, I used to get like kick lumps out of quite a lot, and in the Prem, I did. And I've only ever played against one left back who I thought, you're actually like brilliant. Like, I can't get near you. I've got no chance against you today. And I played against him last season, he was playing right wing, and I was like, what are you doing? Like, you're the best left back. I've played Andy Sandell, his name was. He was at Newport at the time, and he plays right wing now for Chippenham. I was like, what are you doing playing right wing? Like, you're the best left back. But, yeah, he's just bigger, stronger, and better than me at the time.
Does it make it a challenge when you get someone who's,
yeah,
who's trying
I do like playing against good left backs, because then it challenges you. Like, and there has been a few on their day that have been good, and I just think, Cole, you are a really good player. Like, we'd played pro teams in the FA Cup, and you'd see the step up. They wouldn't give you a sniff. They wouldn't let you come inside. They wouldn't let you go outside. And obviously, that is the big step. But from the pro game to non-league, in non-league, you probably could get a kick, but you know, 5 minutes later, you'd get your chance to have a go at him and put a cross in.
And I guess as you've got older and people know more about you, more people know the way you play, you can, yeah, cut in on that left foot and bend it in the top corner. Is that possibly a reason why the goals slightly dried up after the first few years? Do you think word got around in that way?
Yeah, I think, like you say, not a lot of non-league managers do their homework now. And obviously when you're playing against the fullback twice a season and you play against them the next season, they know what you've got to do. And obviously that's when you've got to up your game and try and be better. And if you can't score, try and assist.
You still do try and cut in, though, don't you? Even when they try to show you on the outside, you still want
to
cut in.
You have to try, don't you? Because it's just what you want to do. But obviously if they're not letting you, you just have to come out. But yeah, I do get a bit of the hump when they don't let me inside. But
when, in terms of coming inside and getting crosses in and scoring goals, one of your main weapons seems to be that it's a very short back lift. You're able to whip the ball in very quickly, almost not give the defender or goalkeeper time to get set.
Yeah, it's just one of the things I work on, to be fair. I do work on crossing. And as much as the managers go on now, like last season, I was like, look, you're not scoring enough, but I get more pleasure out of setting goals up. I'd rather be that one that put the ball in. And so, yeah, something I have to work on in my position.
I don't think you assisted anyone more than Elliot. Probably 50 goals or more of his that you set up.
That's what he says, I've done half, so I'll take it.
Why do you think the two of you just had that connection?
We just do, really. Just knew where to be at the right time. I knew where he was going to be. And we always used to say before we went out, look, he'd always try and run around the back. And when he first came to Dartford, he was on the left and I was on the right. And it always seemed to work. I used to overhit the ball with, and he used to always be at the back stick and put him in. So lucky enough, he always knew the right place at the right time.
As the team got promoted, how did you find that step up, you know, having to improve a little bit each season? Because you got all the way up to the conference, you're then playing full-time teams, and arguably that's one of the seasons where you had your best output.
Yeah, I loved it. I love challenging myself, and Tony always used to say, like, try and just be the best out there, just try and be the best player, and that's what I focused on, and like, I thrived off that conference year. I loved it, because obviously, like you say, we was playing full-time teams, and players that have dropped down the leagues that you used to probably watch as a kid and they'd be playing against you, and that's what I used to thrive off, really.
That's your number three pick, actually, when you went up to Luton. You won 2-0 in the November of that season. I mean, describe the feeling of going to somewhere like Kenilworth Road and doing that.
For us as a part-time team, and for us as Dartford coming so far to play Luton in that ground, and I remember when the fixtures come out, I used to say, like, to my dad, like, we're going Luton away, you've got to come. We used to go there as a kid to watch Charlton, and just to go there, and I was flying at the time, I think they were favourites to win the league, and they had players like Andre Gray played up front for them at the time, and you just think, we're not going to get nowhere near these today. And I just wanted to play that game, like, massively. And before we go in, obviously Tone didn't name the team, we're still out on the pitch at 1:30 looking around and taking photos like you do, and Tone pulled me back and I was like, oh, he's going to leave me out Kenilworth Road. And he just went, look, it's going to be like 10,000 people here today. Just go and entertain, and like, we'll win the game. And lucky enough, we went after them early doors and managed to get two early goals and won the game. Second half was like the Alamo; they didn't stop coming. But lucky enough, we held on and won the game there, which was really good scenes at the end, which the Luton players weren't happy about. But it's something that happens in football.
But their fans clapped you off. That must have been very special.
It was crazy. It was mad because they was booing their players and everything they'd done. And I think there was only, I think there was, like I said, 9,000, 10,000 people there at the time. And that second half, when you're playing against that home end, the roar, and obviously it works in our favour that they didn't get behind their team second half. But when they got booed off, and then obviously they run off their players, and we were out celebrating, and they were still there clapping us off, which was one of the best feelings that year.
And let's just remind ourselves some of the players that you had in the team that year. Marcus Bettinelli, who's gone on to play in the Premier League. Mark Arbour had a great career in the full-time game. Champion, Bonner, Burns, Bradbrook, Noble, Harris, Rogers. Tell us about that squad. Why it's so special.
We just had a great team. He kept most of the boys the year before and said we're trying to crack on, like, through momentum. We're trying to do that added arbs, which I think was probably one of the best signings the club ever made, because he come in and just steadied that back four, and his experience, his knowledge of the game, like, he'd speak to you during the game and you'd think, has he seen that? And I've not seen that, do you know what I mean? And we had Betts in goal, which, you knew as soon as he come, he was young, but as soon as he come and played, you just knew he was going to be like a brilliant goalkeeper. He just was so relaxed and he was just good at everything he'd done. He was brilliant. And with him and Arbs at the back, and obviously with Bonds, who had a fantastic season that year, and he got his move, and we had Champs just in front of him, And it just worked well, that midfield of Champs, Bradbrook and Noble, we played the three in there. And it just seemed to work, and everything just, lucky enough, it clicked together and we had the year we did. It
seemed to be the ideal blend of lads who had come up through the leagues, through the Ryman,
yeah.
And they were at the peak of their career, and others who had maybe a touch more experience, and it just came together.
Yeah, massively. Yeah, I think that's one of the main factors, is there were still six or seven of us that were hungry to go on. Do what we'd done, and obviously there was boys that were coming in who were experienced, who had been there and done it, and it just worked. And to be fair, Tone's signings that year was top drawing. And another lad, Jacob, he didn't get enough credit he deserved that year. Erskine up front, and he helped us massively in that year.
You almost sound like you were tourists in a way. You're going to these big grounds, relatively, and taking your photos when you're at these stadiums. You really enjoyed the year.
It was fantastic. We knew we deserved to be there. Obviously, we beat well in the playoff final. We got there and we got back to pre-season, got the fixture list, and we was like, oh, he plays for him and he plays for them. And we got there and we'd go to grounds like Mansfield. It was massive ground. Luton was a massive ground then. And there were still big teams in there. Cambridge, like a well-supported team. And we just went there and lucky enough, Tom was like, look, we'll just go and play with no fear this year. We've got nothing to lose. We'll go and play with no fear. We'll go at teams and it worked in our favour.
I guess the added bonus of the league at the time as well, which is still the case now, matches on the TV as well. So you got the chance to be on the box.
Yeah, it was Dartford's first ever game on Sky, and it worked out quite well that night for us, me personally and the team. So it was brilliant just playing in front of the cameras, and lucky enough it was quite a full house as well.
Yeah, you picked that as your number two. It was, as you say, Mansfield, a Friday night. They were a big side, a big club at that level, and went on to do well. Memories of how the game unfolded, because you were goalless until just before half time.
It was probably the worst half of football ever. If there was people watching it at home on telly, they would have gone, this is dreadful, why have they picked this game? And then, lucky enough, 45 minutes, Harris has laid it back to Elves and he's strung one in the bottom corner. And Mansfield had took scent, like the ball's gone up for a minute, and they've took kick off, and I've gone and nicked the second and put in the top corner. And at half time, Tone's team talk must have gone from being absolutely furious with us to changing it. And lucky enough, like we said, we come out second half and we was more than the better team, which was crazy, really. Because after that game, I think they only went and lost like one or two games. They went and won the league quite comfortably, which was even better for us when you look back at it.
Yeah, they won the league with 95 points that year. How did you go about getting those results, as much as you had? You know, some good players and spirit. You were up against some real big sides, guys who were in training every day. So how did you do?
Yeah, physically and mentally, we was more than a match from most weekends. But like I say, Tone just said, look, if we go after teams and play with no fear, we'll beat them. I think we had some boys in our team that were still working a lot harder than their boys, and lucky enough, we had the quality to bring out the results that we did.
The goal that you scored that night, is that one of your best?
Yeah, I'd say it was up there one of my best. Obviously, being on telly was just an added bonus, and to cut inside and put in the stanchion was it was one of my better goals. Just to who it was against as well, so it is definitely one of my better ones.
Knowing that the cameras were there that night, was there a few boys going out and getting nice haircuts or maybe trying things to impress?
It was a bit of a weird week really, because we played on the Tuesday night and Forest Green spanked us, I think it was in the FA Cup replay, so we're like, oh, when I tell you Friday, like, we're going to get left out. And we had Thursday off for training, we'd come in on the Friday and I'm like, oh, he's going to pull me and leave me out of the game on the telly. And you see a few boys walking past their haircut and that, and I'm thinking, oh. But it was good, it was something that we all worked hard for, and lucky enough it worked out alright for us on the night.
Another big player in that team and other teams that you've been part of at Dartford, Lee Burns. You had a very close partnership with him on the right.
Yeah.
Apart from the season where he went up front and scored 30 goals.
Yeah.
But him as a right back and you as the right winger, why did that work so well?
Probably because he'd done most of my defensive work. I'd say to him before the game, you're going to be on 2-on-1 a lot of the times. And lucky enough, we just had a great friendship. He was my best man at my wedding. And we just clicked and we just knew what each other's strengths were. And it just seemed to work. And like you say, when he went up front, he didn't play up front pre-season. I think it was like the last pre-season game. Tone just threw him up, he scored. And then the first game of the season went, look, I'm going to go two big lads up front, Burns and Alworth. And from then he just kept scoring, everything he touched went in. And you just think, he couldn't hit a barn door in training. Like, he couldn't. And he'd be first to hold his hands up. But in a game, anything he touched just went in.
That's very special to meet someone in your football career that you become such close friends with that it becomes your best mate?
Yeah, we just click, and it's probably because of our sense of humour. So we probably got both sense of humour, and we both probably wind people up the same. We wind the same kind of people up, and we just clicked. Like say him being at right back and me in right midfield in that season that we was in the conference, I think we just gelled even more.
And if he wasn't doing all the hard work behind you, he was running around you, creating those overlaps.
Yeah, lucky enough, he's a machine. And lucky enough, he would run up and down. And I've been lucky enough to play with him. And obviously, Harris took over the year after, which was he was just as good as Burnsy getting up and down, which I'm grateful for.
When you've got someone doing that, it's a great foil for you, isn't it? Because the left back doesn't know whether to go with him and follow the run, and that might create
the
space.
Yeah, and that's what I think helped me a lot, because obviously he'd go and the left back would go with Burns in, and I could cut in and either cross or shoot, which obviously helped. Like he would get the ump that he wouldn't get the ball, he'd just run 60 yards and run past me, and I just used to use him as a diversion,
which he probably knew was going to happen.
Yeah, he knew, like, 9 times out of 10, look, I'm not going to give it to you, but on that 10th time I'd give it to him and he'd put a cross in himself, which I think that's why we just worked well together
that season. Some of the away wins that you had, I bet those coach journeys on the way home were magic, weren't they?
Yeah,
take us inside.
Yeah, it was bus. Obviously some of them were quite fast, so some of us leave on a Friday and come back on a Sunday morning, but they are good. Like we went to Wrexham, we were a massive club then. I think they'd just come down and had massive ground, and we went there and drew, which was a fantastic result for us. Obviously you got the Gateshead journey, and I think we drew up there, which was a good result for us because they were always good at home, and Luton and other big clubs we beat. I think we beat Cambridge, which was even better, last minute winner, which always better ways to celebrate. So yeah, there was always good journeys home. There's always a crate of beer waiting for the boys when we got back home, which was good.
And who were the entertainers on the bus? Would there be someone getting up? And
yeah, Burns is always centre of attention, and in the end boys would just have get the arm with him, like, Burns, sit down, like, you've had enough, just sit down.
Singing, talking, telling stories.
He won't shut up, he just tells story after story. And to be fair, Arbs had thrown a few stories about how he used to play and how he played at Wembley, and it was always good. We had such a good team bond. Everyone just used to get on well with everyone, which was part of the recruitment that obviously you say turned on so well with.
And I think you'll know what I mean when I say this. Did you feel like proper footballers that year?
Yeah, we did, to be fair. Like, even though we only trained twice a week, we'd still go work and train. But on that Saturday, that was our day, and we took it in our grasp and managed to do really well.
As you say, you're part-time footballers. Did that present its own challenge in... You got to balance the day job, I guess, the night job for you at the time. You was working at Smithfield Market, weren't you? A various part of that, balancing that alongside the football.
Yeah, it was tough. It did take getting used to, and like you say, we'd have a midweek game far away. You'd have to come home and obviously working nights. You'd just hopefully you'd get a good sleep on the coach, which wasn't the case, you know, because everyone would be buzzing to get to the game. And some games it didn't work in my favour. I remember none eating away. I worked nights and we was leaving at like 11, 12 to get up there to stop and have some lunch and get up there. And I didn't sleep. I got to none eating. I was like, I can't play. And in the end, I played. I got dragged after 46 minutes. I was like, worst thing that could have happened. But it's something that I got used to. And all the boys, like, they still work hard. There's 9 to 5s like most people. And lucky enough, it did spur us on. It did, because we'd go to teams and some would, like, teams would look down on us because we'd been at work and they'd been training all week and had their days off, but it helped in our favour.
You said it's a real tough thing to do though, isn't it, to balance the two together, and especially playing that level of the game. You know, you look at the league now, it is virtually a full-time league.
Yeah, like you say, it is. You're playing against full-time footballers that are training and working on things every day, and we're at work while they're doing them things. And it is hard when you go to away grounds and you're thinking what you're up against, like, you've not had the time to prepare and or get your rest. But like I say, it spurred us on ever so well that year.
You're listening to the KM Football Podcast.
You spoke earlier in the podcast about being a real confidence player. I think anyone that's watched you over the years, you're quite an emotional character. When you're up, you're really up, and when you're not feeling it, you get quite down. When do you feel happiest? You know, either on or off the pitch.
Yeah, just I am a confidence player. If Tony put his arm around me, it'd only benefit me. Obviously, he knew how to get the best out of me. If I needed a rollicking, he'd give me that rollicking. If I needed the arm around me, he needed the arm around me. I think that's why we did work. But obviously, when I was down, and like, I'd be the worst player on the pitch, and Tony soon noticed that. And it's just, I'm just a confidence player. When I'm good, I'm good, and when I'm bad, I'm very bad.
What about comments from supporters, positive and negative? I'm talking about both someone who stood on the terrace or someone who's posting on a forum or Twitter, you know, how much do those things get through to you?
Yeah, like, massively. Like, we all look at the forums, like, we're told not to, but everyone looks because they're your own fans. Like, you want to see what they're saying about you, and it is the most frustrating thing. You're going to go on there after a game and you think, like, what have they seen? And then you'd come in on the Monday and go, Tone, like, have they seen that? Or, and he's like, oh, look, they're entitled to their opinion, they pay the money. But it's the most frustrating thing in the world when your own fans are saying things about you. But like Tony used to say, look, that's just the smallest minority. Like, it's 5 people out of 1,000 out there. You've just got to take it. And that's what I learned too, because at the start, he'd ring me up and say, look, don't go on the forum. He said, just don't go on there.
So he'd read something, yeah, and he was like, preempting
you. And I'd put the phone down, go on there. And be like, oh, what? But that worked in different ways. That'd either spur you on, or just think, if they're thinking that, then what's the point? But yeah, there's still a group of them now that probably give me stick every week, but I just take it and get on with it.
What have been your most difficult times in football?
I think it was the second year in the conference. Obviously, we lost a lot of the players and our team just got ripped apart. Obviously, Betts went back to Fulham and Champs and Bonner went. Arbs left and we just lost 4 or 5 key members at dressing room, which we didn't replace. It wasn't the players coming in weren't as good. We just didn't have that team spirit. And then I got injured and I was out for the season. That's the most frustrating part I've ever had in football, and I never thought it'd happen to me too. When you see your teammates down, that they're injured, and you just think, why are they upset? Like, why are they down? And I realised that when I obviously done my knee, and it was the most frustrating time on and off the pitch, really.
Yeah, every other season you've pretty much played 35, 40, 50 games.
Yeah.
That season you only managed 20, and the injury, it just seemed to kind of go on and on. We weren't quite sure how bad it was,
yeah,
and when you were going to come back. How did you cope during that time?
It was crazy, really. We was out training on a Thursday night and I just felt something in my knee go. So Tony didn't go in. I said to the physio, look, something in my knee's gone. I don't know what it is, but I couldn't lift my leg up. So I went home and missed the weekend, went for the scan on Sunday, got the results back, and Tony rung me and he said, look, you've got to come in, but bring the missus and we need a chat. I've got your scan results. So automatically I feared the worst. And he said, look, you've got like a small tear in your cruciate, like you're going to be out for a while. So obviously that was a frustrating thing, went away. And as the weeks went on, I went to see different specialists, and they was all saying different things. They was all saying, look, you might not need an op, you might just need a long bit of physio, or go to the next one. They said, look, you need an op, then you'll be back.
Was that the hardest thing, not knowing?
Yeah, because no one knew what to do for the best, and it was frustrating for me, and I just wanted to get back as quick as possible. I didn't. If it went again, it went again. Like I just said, can I play on it? They said, you could play on it, but it's just going to go and that'll be your career, basically. So obviously I couldn't risk that. And in the end, it went on and on and I decided to have the op and that was it. Then I was out for the season.
So you went into that meeting with your wife, Leah. She's been a real rock for you, hasn't she, over the years?
Yeah, she obviously when I get home on a Saturday, she takes the brunt of it if we lose. And which, when you look back, it probably isn't fair that you go home and, you know, going into her for one at home. But lucky enough, she's understood over the years. And she comes home and away, to be fair. She comes to the away games now, brings the kids, and they love it. It's just a family day out now. So, yeah, I was lucky, obviously, when I worked nights and in the conference, I was away all the time. And I had a young family, and I was grateful for her that she was quite understanding.
What does that mean to have them there watching you? You know, they're really invested in what you're doing.
Yeah, I love it, to be fair. I love my little boy there watching me all the time, and he comes home and picks things out of my game now. He's old enough to understand football, and I get home and I'll be like, what do you think I've done? Or get in the car straight after the game and he's like, he's rubbish today. Because like, he just understands football now, and some days I'll get in and go, oh, you done all right? And that's the good thing about, obviously, letting the family go to football, that you share the good memories and obviously the bad ones.
And when we talk about good memories, your all-time favourite moment or game as a Dartford player, I'll let you tell us all about it.
Yeah, Luton at home, 1-0. Like I said earlier, like I grew up watching Luton. I used to go to Charlton. I was actually mascot for Charlton against Luton once at the Valley, and they'd always been like a big club. I know they went down the leagues and they're back in, I think they're back in the Championship now, so... It was always a big club, and that Tuesday night, the night game's always a better atmosphere, and they feel that at their end, and the game was ticking on. It was quite a close game. They had chances and we didn't, and lucky enough I cut inside and managed to put one in the other corner. And just that feeling when I scored that goal against Luton was the best one I've probably had in the Dartfordshire.
I think if I was trying to explain what Ryan Hayes does as a player, I'd probably just show someone that goal. That was just a Hayesy special, that one.
Yeah, it was pretty much what I've worked on like for the years. I mean, going down the wing, cutting inside and bending it in that other corner, and lucky enough that was one that went in. I was quite lucky that night.
It all came from Tom Champion snapping into a tackling midfield, yeah, just showing a little bit more desire probably than their player.
Yeah, I remember it, yeah. The ball come out and it was Mendy that went in with Champs, and Champs won the ball and it just come out wide to me, and that was it. And I was more happy for Champs. He loved that more than the goal. Like, he loved snapping away at people more than the goal, which was a brilliant result for us at the time, for Dartford to do the double over Luton, which was massive. And it's one always the fans talk about, was doing the double over Luton that year.
And in that space of those 10 seconds, probably typified why you were successful that year, because you matched that work, yeah, rate and that desire, yeah, and the bit of quality.
100%, yeah. It was the team spirit and the hunger and the fight we had in midfield and defence that year, and obviously the quality going forward, that game just described Dartford in that season.
For those of us who will never be lucky enough to experience that feeling, can you describe it when you score a great goal like that? You turn away, you run off to your supporters, and it's, yeah, all segregated, and they're shouting and singing your name.
Yeah, to be fair, there have been some good, especially segregated as well, when you see their crowd behind the goal, and you shut them up because they've been singing songs about your game. And when you turn around, you see all the boys running towards you in that corner and see what it means to them as well. Like, they've worked hard for 70 minutes and we've gone and scored. They just know it's a relief now that we've got the goal and something to hold on to.
The Bristol Rovers goal probably quite falls into that category as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, it was, like I say, like another big club that come down, and we wasn't playing the best at the time. We wasn't in a good run of form, and we got a free kick on the edge of the box, and I actually said to Nobes, look, hit it, like, you have it, because if I hit this, he's going to go mad, like, to Tone. Because he used to hate it. He used to hate us shooting from free kicks, because they, 9 times out of 10, they did hit the stand. And Nobes just went, look, just hit it, and just see where it goes. And lucky enough, I've caught it well, and it went into the top corner and celebrated with the Bristol Rovers fans, which probably didn't go down too well at the time, but they got their own back, because they went up that year. So
the two goals you've spoken about, they're two of over 100 that you've scored for Dartford. How proud are you to have reached that landmark?
Yeah, massively. Yeah, I was lucky enough to be there, and the day Elliot got his 100th, and as soon as he got his 100th, I thought, look, I want it. Like, I want that 100th feeling. I wanted to get in the 100th club, and lucky enough, it was at Concord. Funny enough, Concord away, where I put one in, and it was just a crazy day. Like, obviously, Flam was manager at the time, and he knew I was a 99. Because I spoke to him in the morning, he was like, look, if you get your 100th today, that's us, Dunn's friends. And I got the 100th, and I'm buzzing to be in that 100 club with Elliot and Tone.
And talking of special moments as well, you had a testimonial a couple of years ago at Dartford
for
long service.
Yeah, I was lucky enough, the club granted me the testimonial, and had Ebbs Fleet, and it was just good to get all the old boys back together and the new lot we had. Had still there, and yeah, it was a great day, and I'm grateful that the club obviously granted me that for 12 years being there, so I was over the moon for it.
What do you think the future holds for Dartford?
I think there's good times ahead. I think they've got two young, hungry managers in there who just want the best for Dartford. They just want Dartford to do well, and it was probably frustrating for them last year that we didn't do as well as we should have. But as far as the future, Sam, we've got some great young lads coming through. I think this year will be tough, but obviously if we do well and can get in the playoffs, then obviously anything can happen.
And what about your own future? How long do you want to keep playing, and how long do you think those legs will carry up and down?
If I'm honest, I probably think this is probably my last season at Dartford. I think me and Flan have spoke about it, and I just said I think it'll probably be my last year at this level. Like, I don't want to be one of them players that get talked about, oh, he's past it, but he's still there. I just want to go out and try and end on a higher, but for me personally, I want this to be a good season for me and for the club. And as far as the future concerns, I want to keep playing, but I really want to manage one day. I love football and I do want to manage in the near future.
How do you make that decision that, you know, I feel that I'm getting towards the end of playing at this level? Is it just physically, does it get harder?
Yeah, physically this pre-season I felt the best I've felt, and I've lost the weight, and I'm still doing the minutes they want me to do. Physically I still feel fine, and it's probably mentally getting to me that I don't want to be them players who people call like has been. I want to leave when I want to leave. I don't want to be forced out, and I just think this at the end of this season that'd be it for me at Dartford, and depending what happens with them, I should think it probably will be my last year at Dartford.
Will that be a little bit extra motivation for you then?
Yeah, definitely. That's why I've come back, and I had to get my head right, and I want to play well, and I want the team to do well. To be fair, whatever happens to me personally, I want to play, of course, but as long as the team are doing well, that's what all I want at the end of the season.
Having already left once and then come back, does that then make it an easier decision almost in your head now that you know what's going to happen in 12 months, if indeed that is what you do at the end of the season?
Yeah, in a way, obviously, yeah, I think it will. I still think it'd be hard emotionally leaving Dartford because all my friends are there, my close friends are there, and it's not that I want to leave. I just think it's the right time after this season to do it. I just think let someone else come and have a go and see what they can do for the club. It's not that I want to or they want me to, because they're just as surprised when I said to Flan, look, I think this will be my last year at Dartford, and he was like, look, just do what you do, and he's been supportive. And I was actually going to speak to Tone about it in a couple of weeks, just say, look, what do you think the best thing for me to do is? So I'll probably sit down with him in a couple of weeks and say, look, what do you think I should do? Do you think I should carry on playing or managing? See if he wants to be my assistant or something like that. So
still a bit of time for someone to persuade you to carry on then.
Yeah, definitely. I'd still play. I still want to play because I love football, but I love managing, if you know what I mean. I don't like coaching, and I think there's a difference between coaching and managing, and I just like the tactical bit of football, and I just think, obviously I'm 34 now, I'm still playing at a reasonably, like, it's a good level for non-league, and if an offer did come to play lower, then I'd obviously think about it, but I do want to get into managing as soon as possible, because you do see a lot of young managers coming through now, so if there's a chance, and obviously I think you have to take it a lot sooner rather than later.
What sort of manager would Ryan Hayes be?
I wouldn't be a rowdy, shouty one, that's for sure, because I've not got a shout in me, but I'll probably be a moany one, because I'm a bit of a moaner, but as I've heard people say, but I don't know really. I'd be a man motivator, obviously that's worked for me, and I've lucky enough to play under probably one of the better non-league managers, so obviously I'd just take a lot of what he taught me into my game.
How many years have you been thinking along the lines of management's going to come further along, and then do you actually look at people that you're working for, you know, at the moment, Flan and Coyley, but also Tony going back?
Yeah, it's definitely, I think since at the 30 mark, really, obviously, like I say, I always love football, and like I say, the boys get the hump with me, because I'll come in on a Saturday and go, oh, did you watch that game last night, like Yeovil versus Swindon, and like, get a life, like there's better things to do than watch that game, and I'll just watch any game of football, and yeah, I just love it. I just love the tactical side of it, really. I love seeing what people do and what different teams do, and yeah, since the 30 mark I've just thought, look, I want to manage, and I managed my little boys team for a year, and that worked out all right, and it just gave me the hunger to do it in the men's game, really.
And would you balance the two? Would you play and manage as you get older?
Obviously, that depends with the people you have around you, like your assistant and the coach you get in. But like I say, I do love playing. Like, I wake up every Saturday morning still with a buzz in my belly that I'm going to kick a ball about for an hour and a half on the Saturday. But obviously, when the time does come to leave Dartford, managing is what I want to do, really. But obviously, like you say, if the offer to come play, to keep playing lower down in the Prime and Prem, or even lower, then obviously after something I'll think about.
You say leave Dartford, I guess the ultimate is to therefore go back and manage Dartford, isn't it?
That is the dream, yeah, and I'll still give Flan stick now. I'll still say, look, you lose your first couple, I'm here. this is me, and he hates it, to be fair. He has a laugh about it, but then he'll text me in a couple of hours later and he go, look, don't say that in front of the boys. But to be fair, I always said to him, I go, look, if we lose today, like, I could be in that seat Monday. But yeah, that is the dream, obviously I'm probably not ready for it now, but obviously years down the line I'd love to go back and manage the club I play for.
I guess it just sums up how special a club it is for you.
It has been very special to me, and that's what was even bigger mistake leaving, to be fair, like, but like you say, you learn by your mistakes, and I paid a heavy price for leaving, and it was the wrong thing to do. But as a family club, you can't ask for any better. You just can't. You just, the great people there, the chairman's there, the director's there, everyone, the kit man, everyone that works at that club just want the best for Dartford. They're all Dartford people, and just makes it more of a special place.
Normally, Ryan, we do the quick fire questions at this point, but we seem to have covered quite a few of those already. So I've only really got one, which was just to ask you to do your best Tony Berman impression without any swear words of him having a go at Ryan Hayes down the touchline.
I just don't think you could do it without swearing. He'd always say, like, the F word at the end, but when I'd kick something, kick the ball out or make a mistake, running past that dugout was the worst 5 seconds of the game because he'd proper get into me. But I used to hate making a mistake just for half time because he'd forget the 44 minutes, and that 1 minute he would rip into me. And yeah, I've been on the end of it a few times over the years.
Just a couple of quick fire questions. We spoke about some great midfielders that you've played with, but which was the best centre-forward that you've played with at Dartford in terms of looking up and putting a ball in the box and knowing they're going to get on the end of it?
I've been lucky to play with really good forwards. Like when I first went, we signed Cass, who was just a fox in the box. He was just one of the best goal scorers you'd ever see at that level. He would just get a chance and put it. Like he wouldn't do nothing in the game for 89 minutes, but you knew if he got the chance, he'd put it away. And he was so instrumental to what we'd done that year. We went up in the north, and then obviously Cody Mack come along and was just like a brush of fresh air to Dartford. Like he was unbelievable. He'd score goals from anywhere, and I was lucky enough to play with him for a short time, and he got his move. And Charlie, me and Charlie just on the same wavelength since he's come in. I knew exactly where he wanted the ball, and biggest moaner in the world, biggest moaner I've ever played with, but he'd only want the best for you and the best for him. And lucky enough he got his move and he's back at Dartford now, which only work out for me. So them three forwards, and like I say, Burnsy went up top, and we had Robbie Aworth up top. He didn't get the credit he deserved, really. He didn't score a lot, but he'd do the other person's work, which I've been lucky enough to play with great forwards.
And Jamie and Adam have brought in a fair few new players this summer. Just one tip for the season, someone that you've watched in training and think, oh, they're going to have a good season?
At the moment in time, Sam Blackman has been unbelievable. He's just a younger version of Nobes. Obviously, he's not near Nobes yet, and all he wants to do is play with Nobes. That's all he keeps saying. It's like, Nobes, when you're back fit, and I just think this season he'll be huge for Dartford.
Ryan, time has beaten us. We've really enjoyed the last hour, looking back over your almost one club career with Dartford, and congratulations on it. And as we said at the start, over 600 games, over 100 goals. It really is something to be very proud of. Thanks so much for coming in and joining us.
Brilliant. Thanks for having me. It's been brilliant. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the KM Football Podcast. Click subscribe at Audio Boom and iTunes, and keep up to date with the latest stories at kentonline.co.uk.